episode 241 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by The Unheard Scene, your home for great music interviews of all stripes. Follow them on the web at unheardscene.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
All right, everyone, welcome. It is FDH Lounge mini episode number 241. Rick Morris, along with the Patron brothers, Anthony and Matt, Bob Glassman, John Adams, Chris Galloway, original FDH Lounge dignitary, along with myself, breaking it down here. It's the best of the best.
We've all come up with our
Yes, yes. You guys shaking hands 12 times here today, ritually, as we go through and breaking these down. This one here, the most wide open of all of our categories today. There are no duplicate votes. Yes, Anthony, you gave me the idea for this category, the best underappreciated musical album, best of the best of all time. I'm just going to run down the list, and I will credit a lot of the ones individually as we go through here. An incredible amount of variety in these, different styles, genres, times, you name it. One that I have, and again, I am a bigger fan of Rush than anybody else. They're my favorite band. This is one that everybody's always crap. Nobody likes it because it wasn't. Everybody thinks it's kind of time when they're getting a little bit too kind of carried away with some of the keyboards and synth stuff here. I've always liked Hold Your Fire, 1987 album from Rush. That is something that the Rush purists always kind of crap on. So I expected that my vote would be very controversial. Then again, like my second choice is another one that always gets dumped on, too. My second choice would have been A Tunnel of Love by Springsteen, but that's another one that's completely unloved by the masses. So there you go.
Wow, Chris just called you number one.
All right. Going down the list here.
I agree with that. He's number one.
You're gonna love all of these ones here, collectively at least. Lloyd Carroll, his pick. Realization by Johnny Rivers. Kyle Ross, good hipster that he is, Doolittle by the Pixies. Ben Chu, bringing a little bit
thriller,
of...
Thriller.
Nope. Ben Chu, same time period, a contemporary of that. Ben Chu going with Can't Slow Down by Lionel Richie. Nick Despins brings a little bit of love for So Much for the Afterglow by Everclear. Tim Dustin with Third Eye Blind by Third Eye Blind. Chris, your vote, Unleaded by Dred Zeppelin. One of the more inventive votes out of the bunch here, to be sure. Bob, your vote, Delivering by Poco. I know that you are a huge, huge fan of theirs and everything, and you've spoken generally of liking that general time period and some of the great music, them and the Eagles and some of the things going on there. So that was your favorite out of, was it your favorite out of all of theirs, or your sense that it was just kind of underappreciated generally?
Underappreciated, last of Jim Messina. Fury only had one more, and just a very good. And I guess I enjoy live albums. Still enjoy alternate recordings of music and search for those. And that was of that essence.
Oh, okay. That was an interesting vote. The next one here, Ken Beck's "The Scout" goes with "Now and Zen" by Robert Plant. Good friend Tony Mazur, who of course again used to do you guys' podcast with you back when he had availability to do so. The Unheard Scene. With you, the Patron brothers. He goes for Songs for the Deaf by Queens of the Stone Age. That's his pick.
That doesn't surprise me with him.
Okay.
Actually, it kind of does me. I thought he would have said something by Offspring.
Oh, okay. That was his pick. John, this is one here where, as I said, we're going to talk about this one here. Appetite for Destruction by Guns N' Roses, which it naturally leaves everyone thinking, how is this underappreciated commercially or critically?
Yeah, as I said earlier, we were kind of talking. Yeah, I just see it as like I took the reference personally in terms of maybe a playlist or an album in your collection that you've not listened to in some time, and maybe you just catch a glimpse or you put it on, and then you realize every song is just.
He just didn't want
really
the Barcelona
good.
Spain answer to be that far out there, the only one.
That's right.
Chris, is this the Barcelona Spain of this category?
It really is, because I consider Appetite for Destruction one of the top 10 rock albums top for a, from a top to bottom standpoint. So yes,
I've seen it as voted number one. I mean,
yeah.
This is like saying, you know, great winter getaway, underappreciated winter getaway, Miami.
And again, we keep referencing Barcelona, Spain. Ben Chu in Pantheon 6 voting for that as best underappreciated vacation spot.
Oh, I just thought it was funny. That category in itself was funny because you have Ben Chu with Barcelona, then you have my wonderful brother here within bed. So.
Yes. Best one in bed, yes. What's very interesting, and one of two folks that was an RSVP yes for today that we haven't seen yet, Ron Glasnap. I would have loved to have asked him about this personally. Rumors by Fleetwood Mac. That's kind of along the same lines, except maybe it's a thing where maybe he's figuring, I can only figure, retroactive shame, kind of like, oh, really? I can't believe I listened to that back in the day. Maybe that's what he means by
but
that.
If you're going
to
throw that in there, how many people will say any Michael Jackson album?
True.
Would be
but
the same way, because everybody nowadays will tell you, oh, no, I didn't like Michael Jackson. I didn't like Michael Jackson. Well, then how the hell was he so damn popular?
I have a note on this one from our friend Raymond Smalley, who also one of the voters in the category. He says, side note, pop culture journalist Chuck Klosterman said rumors had, quote, unquote, no justification for greatness, but it was ranked 25th on the Rolling Stone 500 Greatest Albums. Four top 10 singles from the album Dreams was the only number one. So I don't know. I would have loved to have been able to draw out Ron on this if he were here at this point. I can only assume that he figures that it became uncool retroactively. I don't know, but that's my sense of it. Ken Detweiler, another one of the RSVP yeses that we haven't seen yet at this point. This is a very interesting one by him. Live at Radio City by Dave Matthews and Tim Reynolds. Frankly, a bit hipper than I would have expected
really
out of Kenny.
I thought he would have said Van Halen.
Yeah.
Dance, Ken Detweiler. Dance.
Yeah.
Sorry, had to be said.
That's an old unheard scene reference.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Props to Ken, staying a little more current on his music than I was perhaps aware of. Good for him. A second vote for Rush, albeit this is Steve Cervillo votes for Permanent Waves by Rush. Bob Benick votes for Stained Class by Judas Priest. Anthony, your vote Exposed by Vince Neil. Matt, your vote, Living It Up by Sammy Hagar.
I got to be honest with you, I think the album might be called Living on the Coastline. That was one of the albums that I found it in a bargain bin. Okay, I never knew it existed. It was after Van Halen, and I put it in the CD player, and I'm literally trying to sing along with songs that I've never heard before.
Okay.
It just popped into my mind, and every song on it, okay, but now be it I like the kind of the Mexico kind of theme, Living on the Coastline, kind of theme to the music, but every song on it, I just...
It's like a follow-up to Cabo Wabo?
Kind of.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is, there's a lot of remakes on there.
There is.
On that CD that aren't bad. I mean, he redid I Love This Bar by Toby Keith. He redid, what was the Bob Dylan song on there that he redid?
I don't remember the Bob Dylan one. Wasn't it the Stone song that he redid?
No. He redid a couple of songs on there that weren't that bad.
Sammy Hagar did a Bob Dylan song?
I think so.
It was Brain Fart.
I never heard of that Bob Dylan song.
Yeah.
It's a really good one. I've been trying to hum a few bars.
That was a Brain Fart.
Yeah. That was from his really far out folky days.
But anyway, go on.
Yeah.
It's not important.
The next one here, a real critical favorite, to be sure. Tom Denk, Mr. Flatstick, our friend, the golf correspondent. The Last Waltz by the Band. I mean, that is a classic critics type pick right there. By Tom, very, very smart pick. Good friend Jeff Briscoe, again, we have notes on this one from him, our good friend, talk show host down in Florida. An Innocent Man by Billy Joel. Here's what he says. It was my favorite album as a kid. I think Joel is largely overlooked because of his demons and having stepped out of the spotlight. The album was the high point of his career and landed him the world's most beautiful woman. So there's the criteria Jeff was using.
There's almost kind of another Appetite for Destruction. I mean, that was pretty much his big album, wasn't it?
Yeah, but I mean, did the critics ever love Billy Joel? I mean, am I right about that, Bob? I mean, he was never a critical favorite.
Why not on the level of Appetite for Destruction? It was probably his most popular album, and I don't think meets the underappreciated.
Okay.
Well, I think there's other ways. You can look at underappreciated beyond just sales and what the critics think, but also what did the album do? Joel, but I mean, what did they do something musically that had never been done before? Did they break new ground? That can be sort of the and the album could have sold, you know, gazillion out records, but you know the masses might not recognize really what was going on musically. So you could, there is a way that you can look at something like Appetite for Destruction and say underappreciated from a certain standpoint as it relates to the masses. You know, after they get past Paradise in the City, or you know, that album is really dynamic in many ways, and so that's in my mind to justify it. That's one of the ways you can look at underappreciation.
Yeah, again, I kind of took it from a personal standpoint. So, I mean, some things just take off. I heard something on the radio the other day. The Fight for the Right to Party by the Beastie Boys was actually a satire on that, you know,
right,
jock guy, whatever. And everybody took it as, we need to party.
Uh-huh. That's true. That's a very good point. Well, I was arguing with somebody about this, and specifically on the Guns N' Roses thing here, and somebody was, I forget who, somebody was arguing with me and saying, well, maybe it wasn't even necessarily regarded as their best album. I'm like, what are you telling me? Somebody's slotting this somewhere below the Spaghetti Incident? I mean, come on. It's not like people are saying, I like five Guns N' Roses albums better than that one.
But I did, I considered actually Beastie Boys' License to Ill, not because it's all a billion. Mm-hmm. But I actually consider it because of the ground they broke.
Yeah,
and I don't think the masses really. I mean, I didn't appreciate it in 1986 when it came out. 85, I think it was eighth grade. 85. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't appreciate it. I as an eighth grader, I was like, party, you know, No Sleep Till Brooklyn. Yeah, you know, I mean, and then you go back and it's on my iPod, my iPhone right now, and I listen to that, and it's a remarkable album.
It is. There's no question about that.
Appreciated from that scene.
I guess, yeah.
He is correct, because look at how many different bands spun off of that. Like you get Linkin Park, that they rap in rock songs. All those other bands that do that because of them.
That is true.
There's your underappreciated, I guess. I get that.
That is true. The last three that were represented in this, good friend Paul Pasek, going with The Great Radio Controversy by Tesla. Nate Noy voting for... And this is another one of these ones. We've had some huge sellers that have been represented here, and we got another one, Sports by Huey Lewis in the News. And as Nate said to me, it's just that he's looking at it like it doesn't really hold up, that it was huge at the time, as it was, but doesn't really hold up as far as people appreciating it, much like, I mean, I guess it's appreciated more than Rumors by Fleetwood Mac, but, you know, because there's more critical respect, I think, given to Fleetwood Mac than there is Huey Lewis in the News, but... You know, you're not talking about probably a ton in either regard there. So that was his reasoning.
I think, and that speaks to me as a kind of a period piece.
Yeah.
You know, you think about the, I think about like the original Footloose.
Right.
And while there was a remake made, there was still a naivete to that time period originally that, you know, there really isn't now. So I don't think it has the same. So while it was a great album at the time, I don't think it has the staying power, although it, you know, it could be underappreciated.
That's very possible. But it's, I think by that criteria, you know, it might be. But in terms of the last vote that we have here, this is kind of funny, too, because a couple of guys mocked Raymond Smalley the last time around here for being a little bit precious on the music votes here, because he was the one that was saying that he took into account, you know, the Billboard... or not Billboard, but the Rolling Stone top albums of all time when he was going for greatest album here. He goes for a real critic's favorite here. Again, MTV Unplugged in New York by Nirvana. So another one of these ones where he was clearly working at it. Again, there were those who disagreed last time with him going by, in some instances, the opinions of others. I remember that was kind of a flashpoint in the discussion.
The only reason I wouldn't consider that one is because there was no new material.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was certainly groundbreaking the way they did MTV Unplugged when they unveiled that program.
Uh-huh.
It had bands on doing that, but I didn't take into consideration something like that just because there was no new material.
Right.
Just a performance.
That's true. Yeah, it was just a different version of the stuff. Although, I mean, I go back to a previous conversation. I think it was actually on you guys' show. Back in the day with Tony Mazur, and I think Tony was complaining about all the different ways that the one Linkin Park album, the Hybrid Theory, had been repurposed. And keeping in mind that that's probably my favorite album of all time, I voted for that as greatest album, because it's my personal favorite. And I remember, and I said to him at the time, and I didn't want to be argumentative, but I really like meant this. I'm like, I don't care how many ways that they repurpose that. I don't care, my exact quote was, just off the top of my head, if they do a Brazilian bottle jug remix of Hybrid Theory, I want to hear it. I want to hear as many, it was just what came to me. But I want to hear it as many ways as I possibly can. That's how I look at
it. Well, this begs sort of the Bill Clinton moment in terms of, it depends what your definition of is.
Mm-hmm.
Because is your definition of an album, is it just, somebody threw 12 songs and put them on a CD, or is it the band went down, sat down, even the live tracks,
right?
But they engineered an album, in studio with, songwriting and back in the day,
yeah,
maybe not as much anymore with iTunes and all the rest of that in play, but bands really made albums, and it was almost like they were telling a story throughout the album. I mean, they had cover artwork. They would give you lyrics inside. There would be behind the scenes some photos.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they really made the album more of an experience in
right.
its totality. And so, therefore, something like Nirvana's Unplugged, that was a TV program that they did that MTV made CDs into and shipped
right.
out. In my mind, is that an album, or is that just a collection of a live performance that they just threw out? That the band themselves performed, yes, but it was, it's not necessarily from the traditional sense an album that was band generated creatively from the beginning. So again, what's your definition of album?
That's an interesting point here, and what constitutes new stuff? Because I look
Deep.
At it in the case of all of the Hybrid Theory stuff, Reanimation. They did it in a different way. They were working some more techno type elements into it. The album that they did with Jay-Z, that was just straight up mashup stuff. And I'm pretty much a whore for mashups, so I love that. I mean, it's six pure mashups that they did with Jay-Z. So
an example from my favorite band,
mm-hmm.
Kiss.
Mm-hmm.
What was the album that made the band Kiss alive?
Yeah,
they did a double album live, and that was a conscious decision to tape those and put out that live album, double album, and that rocketed them to fame.
Right.
But it's there was everything on that was something off an album that they had done previously.
That's true. So out of the ones that we have here, again, we'll have to see on the next ballot here if any of these end up getting two votes. Just to recap briefly, Hold Your Fire by Rush, Realization by Johnny Rivers, Doolittle by the Pixies, Can't Slow Down by Lionel Richie, So Much for the Afterglow by Everclear, Third Eye Blind by Third Eye Blind, Unwedded by Dred Zeppelin, Deliverin' by Poco, Now and Zen by Robert Plant, Songs for the Deaf by Queens of the Stone Age, Appetite for Destruction by GNR, Rumors by Fleetwood Mac, Live at Radio City by Dave Matthews and Tim Reynolds, Permanent Waves by Rush, Stained Glass by Judas Priest, Exposed by Vince Neil, Living It Up by Sammy Hagar, The Last Waltz by The Band, An Innocent Man by Billy Joel, The Great Radio Controversy by Tesla, Sports by Huey Lewis and the News, MTV Unplugged in New York by Nirvana. So at the outset, I'm tempted to kind of defer on my vote, not that I'm going to sit the round out, but I kind of want to hear where somebody else goes with this, if anybody's going to go with a second vote for one of the bands we've seen already, or with something new.
Let me just defend my vote real quick.
Okay.
So everybody at the table can hear. Vince Neil, let's step this back and say, with Motley Crue, everybody knows it, with Motley Crue, Nikki Sixx did all the writing.
Sure.
It was all him, everything was him. Vince Neil stepped back and did his own writing on this album. Had this album come out when Vince was in Motley Crue, might have been the biggest thing they ever recorded. It might have shown a whole new face to the band, because it wasn't as dark, let's just say, as most of the Motley Crue songs were. So I think it would have put
Didn't that have You're Invited But Tranny Can't Come?
Yes.
With Damn Yankees as the backup band?
Damn Yankees was the backup band. It was also in the movie in Encino Man.
Oh, okay.
It was in Encino Man with Pauly Shore and Brendan Fraser.
I didn't know that was off of there. Okay.
It was like 30 seconds
rink.
Of it. They were in the skating rink.
Okay.
In the background.
Oh, I didn't know that was off of there. Okay.
But it would have put a whole new face to Motley Crue. It would have put a whole new, wow, this is something totally different I never seen before. And it might have made that band bigger than what they actually were.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you, you actually won me over. I'm thinking to myself, I don't know any of the material off of that album, but yeah, now that I do, I would vote for that.
Okay, for my second pick,
I was gonna change it up and say the one that Anthony and I had talked about and say Brian May's Back to the Light. I think that does need brought up, but that's not going to be my second vote.
Okay.
My second vote, I am going to go with Vince Neil's Exposed for the simple reason, like Anthony said, it would have been a huge album because you would have had Vince Neil and Nikki Sixx collaborating on the writing of this,
okay,
this album instead of just one of them. It just would have blown everybody away, I think.
Say real quick, my second vote would have been Brian May, Back to the Light.
Okay. Brian May, Back to the Light, so that's your...
That one,
right.
That one would have been a Queen album.
Okay. Yeah, true. All right, well, the excellent Perry Mason job by you, Anthony, has won two more votes on the second ballot. Let's continue going around the table, see if it holds up. Bob Glassman, second ballot for you, my friend.
I'm going to go a different something I might have put first time, but if there is or was a third round, I might have gone with the Vince Neil album. Enjoyed Motley Crue, different takes, sound like it took it to a different place. I'm going to go with The Outlaws by The Outlaws.
Okay.
The first album, first group ever signed by Clive Davis to the fledging at that time, Arista Records. Great wiki page, combining the guitars of Lynyrd Skynyrd with the harmonies of an Eagles. And I know I was probably very stoned the first dozen times I listened to it, but it just blew me away. A great album, and I'll leave it at that.
I love the bands you referenced right there. So yeah, you sold me. If it's any kind of amalgam of them and their styles, that's tremendous. Anthony, by the way, as I'm jotting these down, what was the name of the Brian May one?
Back to the Light.
Back to the Light. Okay. All right, Johnny, what's your sense for the second ballot?
I'm intrigued by Brian May, Back to the Light, because I'm a huge Queen fan.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll make that my second vote.
Okay. All right, that's got two, and as of right now, Exposed by Vince Neil has three. Coming around to you, Chris. Let's see if we go to the third ballot.
Well, I just want to explain my unleaded Led Zeppelin
Please.
Choice. I just love the genre collision that they did, taking a classic rock giant like Led Zeppelin and basically covering them format, and it's if you listen to the album from top to bottom, they do Led Zeppelin from a reggae standpoint as well as Led Zeppelin did the original Led Zeppelin. And if you haven't had a chance to just pull that album off of iTunes and listen to it, it is a great album. It did nothing in terms of, you know, sales of any consequence, I don't think, but it is phenomenal. And so from that standpoint, in terms of breaking ground on taking another genre as in terms of difference and then applying reggae to it, I just thought it's an amazing album that I think a lot of people probably need to hear. I think for my second vote, I'm going to go, and this is, again, I'm going to vote, this is a total off-the-wall vote, but I'm going to go with Tom Cochran, Mad Mad World.
Okay.
And Life is a Highway, played over and over, and other artists have redone it. And so from the album sales standpoint, it was not unappreciated. However, from a top to bottom album, taking out Life is a Highway, which is probably my least favorite song on that album,
right,
is a great album. I mean, great album that I would suggest to anybody to put into their iPod rotation immediately.
Well, exactly. I mean, as somebody who's always kind of loved Texas blues kind of stuff myself, it's funny because it was the hits in the 80s that got me to explore the Fabulous Thunderbirds. And it was like, the thing is, like, the best crap they did is the stuff that didn't get played. I hate to sound like a hipster. You know, you've never heard the best stuff they did. I don't want to be that guy.
Well,
but I know what you mean
about
Tom Cochran.
Just like him. No,
I pretty much do. Yeah, you know, you don't know the best stuff that they did, but that's what reminds me of Chris's point about Tom Cochran. But sometimes that's true. Sometimes you have to sound like that.
There are X million number of people that never got past the first track on that album.
Sure.
Or only bought the single.
Right.
And they completely missed out on an amazing album.
And how many people in the younger generation don't even know that he actually came out with that song, Life Is a Highway?
No, that's right, because they know who is the country artist.
Some idiot with a twang. Oh, okay.
Yes,
all right. Yeah.
You know, my daughter, Yeah. My daughter had it on. She had the Rascal Flatts version on her iPod because that's right. what Disney Channel or somebody introduced it to her.
Yeah.
But you know, actually, not to digress too much, but that's the great thing about the internet and iTunes and those types of things right now, because my daughter has on her iPod, 14 years old, she has the Beatles, she has Beastie Boys, she has things.
So
that
does his 11-year-old son.
But here's the thing: when I was that age, I had what me and my friends had. You know, we had Motley Crue, Shout at the Devil. We all had the same stuff. If we had all had iPods at the time, we all would have had the same 20 albums.
Right.
There was no variety, no exposure. My daughter has Donovan on her iPod.
Wow.
Okay. So they were able to get exposure to things that none of us had in the past. So that's
the
great
thing. Years later,
like
the thing I remember, like in college, then we would get into like tape trading and stuff. I'm gonna copy your tape, man. You know, like that kind of thing. Then you get exposed to other stuff.
I think in college you got exposed to more stuff, but even then it was limited. The fact that there are kids in there.
Right.
You know, they're 10, 11 years old, and they've got the entire Beatles catalog on there.
Right.
On their iPod is just amazing.
It is. My son has a song on his iPod that he sings at school, and people look at him like he's stupid.
Mm-hmm.
My son's got The Night Chicago Died by Paper Lace
on
his iPod, and he sings that song. He loves that song, and people look at him like he's stupid. So, yeah, you can get anything you want now.
So I don't know if I can get anybody to bring their vote over to Tom Cochran, Madman World.
That's
I'm making a pitch.
That's a good one there, but the one that picked up two votes in this round, gonna win this thing, it looks like. Exposed by Vince Neil, lift the Dundee Award and induct it as the newest member into the FDH Lounge Pantheon. A little bit of a dark horse coming in, but then again, what wasn't a dark horse, I guess, when they've all got only one vote apiece
coming into this
thing? I kind of
figured that would be, I got to be honest here, figured it'd all be a one vote, and it would come down to the tiebreaker, and that's where I'm going to be honest, I sit through in that Sammy Hagar one because I could throw in my Brian May Back to the Light.
Yeah.
And I should have stuck with that, and that probably would have won.
And the guy who comes
that
up
was my
with
original
category.
Voice.
Yeah.
That was my original Ask Anthony when we were having the brain melt there on that one, because, you know, our music.
Yeah.
We had lots of fun conversations.
How many votes did this get now?
This got three votes total, because Matthew and I went for it on the second ballot. So it was pretty
the
close.
I'd like
to
make
to
it.
Light,
I want it, and I'm going to now listen. I'm going to pull this album and listen to it now, because now I'm very intrigued.
Yeah.
From a procedural standpoint, something for you to think about in the future. I wonder in the future, for anything getting into the Pantheon, if there should be a vote minimum. Kind of like, you know, into the Hall of Fame, you have to have X amount.
Interesting.
Consensus. You know, meaning somebody could have won this right off the bat with two votes, and we'd all be, and they'd be in the Pantheon.
Okay.
Does two votes really get you into the Pantheon?
Underappreciated vacation spot, I'll tell you this, because again, Matt said when we did Pantheon 6, his prediction was nothing would get more than one. That was why he voted for In Bed, and basically, as my dad would characterize my vote in the last presidential election, threw my vote away. But anyways, that was a thing where it did get two votes, because myself and Bob Benick, good friend, and it's the funny thing is it's not a mind meld thing, but I knew that he had been there and he knew that I had been there, and we've both talked about our fondness of it. Ogle Bay Resort down in Wheeling, West Virginia, fun place down there, great place, kind of under the radar, especially, you know, if you're outside this region, kind of don't know about it, but so much great fun stuff to do, paddle boats, golf, putt-putt, what have you, and everything like that, omelet chef for breakfast, you know, and everything like that, so that got two votes and it won,
and I...
That one
was
going to
say, are you going to think about the best omelet item now?
I got mine with
I
bacon
think I'll
and
vote
cheese,
Dewey
Johnny.
Sausage.
Yeah. I'm going with anything that's from a pig.
I was just going to say pig.
Cheese. That's right. Well, you know what?
Best omelet. We'll have to do that one subsequently.
I asked that from a procedural standpoint
for
future consideration that maybe for something to get in the Pantheon, it's got to get a minimum number of votes, if 40% of the vote or something along those lines.
And then maybe we just,
I don't view some topics not getting into the Pantheon as a bad thing.
That's interesting.
Right.
And
because
you know what?
Because it makes for great radio. Because we can all sit here and have the discussion, and folks at home can listen, and they can yell through their computer or whatnot, their iPod at us, and say you're all wrong. It's this.
We almost always have. We had 25 votes this time. We almost always have between 25 and 35, and it's almost always about the same number, same people involved. Sometimes differences. Having said that, we could always revisit it at another point. Okay, this didn't make it last time. Maybe we do it the next time or whatever, see if anything changes.
Well, like
that's
this time now, I'm going to go listen to Vince Neil's Expose. Right. And somebody might grab Tom Cochran, Mad Mad World, and they want to, you know.
Yeah.
Or Unleaded by Dred Zeppelin.
Right.
It's So something not making it would actually give everybody an opportunity to go and listen to other things.
That's actually a very good point, and that revisiting it subsequently, we will we'll have to kick this one over to the Rules Committee and see what they want to do with this subsequently, but I personally kind of like the idea here. So congratulations to Vince Neil for the Exposed album in the Pantheon, mini episode number 241.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, All Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.